Tiger!
Order, order.
The second week of this adjournment included just one select committee meeting. The Finance and Expenditure Committee met in Auckland on Wednesday to discuss a bill that had suddenly become the hot topic of the week, as Tom Frewen reports.
While debate raged about the accuracy and political motivation of leaked real estate data, appearing to reinforce anecdotal evidence that non-resident Chinese speculators are fueling Auckland's rising house prices, MPs on Parliament's Finance and Expenditure Committee were getting to grips with the government's response to the issue in the form of legislation called the Taxation, open brackets, Land Information and Offshore Persons Information, close brackets, Bill. Introduced on June the 22nd, it had been foreshadowed in briefings by the Prime Minister John Key in May and outlined to the House by his Finance Minister Bill English in his budget statement on Thursday, May the 21st.
Mr. Speaker, as previously announced, the budget contains measures to bolster and enforce the tax rules on property. This is to ensure that people buying and selling properties for a profit, including foreigners, are paying their fair share of tax. In particular, some people will now have to provide an IRD number when they buy and sell property. This requirement will apply to all non-residents and to New Zealanders who are buying and selling a property that's not their main home. In addition, if someone sells a residential property within 2 years of purchase, they will now have to pay income tax on any profit they make from the sale. There will be some exceptions, including for a person's main home. The government will consult on these changes and implement them from 1 October.
And that's the commencement date on the bill, which had its first reading debate 5 weeks after Mr. English delivered his seventh budget on Thursday, June the 25th, with its two main components outlined by the Minister for Land Information, Louise Upston.
The package of measures will ensure that people buying and selling residential property for profit, including overseas buyers and short-term speculators, pay their fair share of tax. From the 1st of October, all offshore investors and New Zealand residents buying or selling property, which is not their main home, must provide a New Zealand Inland Revenue number as part of the land registration process. If a person is resident for tax purposes in another jurisdiction, they will also have to provide the tax identification number or TIN number issued to them by that country. This will help Inland Revenue identify people who are trading property for the purposes of making gains in the New Zealand market. All of this tax information will go to Land Information New Zealand, or LINZ, who in turn will provide the information to Inland Revenue.
Louise Upton said taxpayer information was personal and would not be publicly available.
However, Mr. Speaker, the bill does make provision for the publication by LINZ of aggregated information relating to the tax residency of persons undertaking property transactions. For example, statistics describing the relative number of transactions by persons who are tax resident in other countries compared to those who are not. This will not be the same as a register of foreign ownership, because there are many New Zealand citizens who are tax residents of other countries, but they are not foreigners. But the collated tax residency information will provide useful additional layer of information to inform debate about property ownership in New Zealand.
So while debate about property ownership in New Zealand raged on without the benefit of that useful additional layer of information, members of Parliament's Finance and Expenditure Select Committee, chaired by National's David Bennett, gathered in the Tauaka Conference Room of the Novotel Hotel at Auckland Airport at 8:30 on Wednesday morning to hear submissions on the bill. Rhys Lyon reports.
Making a submission on the bill at the meeting in Auckland, Property Investors Federation President Terry LaGrove welcomed the bill's intended clarification of existing tax laws, but warned that the two-year test for whether a land or house sale should incur tax could cause problems.
At the moment we feel that it's on the outside limit of what it should be. At the moment it is aimed at the traders and speculators, but if that two-year test went further on, to say 5 years or 10 years, it starts to become a capital gains tax on rental properties. And with any business, whenever there's cost increases or regulatory increases, usually it's the consumer, in this case the tenant, who will feel the brunt of that. So once this proposal was in the public arena, it was the Herald actually had four articles within a week saying that it didn't go far enough, that the that this two-year test should be extended out further and further, and that investors should be hammered. We implore you not to do that. As I say, this is not the intention, or what we see is the intention of the bill. So what we would like to see is that the two-year test is actually reduced to something like a year.
The Property Investors Federation president also addressed the bill's other stated aim to set up a register of property sales.
The point of the bill, I guess, is the register of the, or looking at overseas people. We would agree with that. Basically, any foreigner coming in here and buying investment property is a competitor to us. So, like any business, you want to try and get rid of your competitors, I guess. But we do want to see that legislation is done correctly, which is why we haven't actually been saying that, that this is a problem, or the house prices in New Zealand are a problem of foreign investors coming in. We just don't know. So we agree with having good information. So we agree with setting up the controls that this bill that does look at introducing to find out if there actually is a problem. And if there is a problem, then introducing some laws to tackle that problem. So we think it's a good thing.
Property Investors Federation President Terry LeGrove. And another submission on the bill came from Auckland District Law Society's Property Law Committee convener, Bryce Towne, who hoped compliance with the proposed property register wouldn't add significantly to the time taken to finalise land and house sales.
Timing is a big issue. Time drifts pretty quickly, and to fit getting that information that we're going to require into the current timeframes of sale and purchase agreements is going to be really pushing it. I think that timeframes will need to be extended. Once an agreement becomes unconditional, traditionally you might have 2 weeks, maybe three, to complete settlement. IRDs may get you an IRD number within 10 working days. The trading banks say that they should be able to get a bank account for an overseas person within 10 working days. Then they can go and get an IRD number within 10 working days. You've got 20 working days there, that's a month. Maybe you need to even push it out a bit longer. I think the practicality will be that people push out the timeframes. Getting the vendor's information can be achieved early in the piece, but the purchaser's information, particularly if they're an overseas person, is problematic.
Bryce Towne suggested the bill could benefit from further work.
It may be helpful, given that this legislation is going to have a significant impact on the way that conveyancing is carried out in New Zealand, that if there could be some further meetings between ministerial staff, parliamentary draftsmen, and the New Zealand Law Society, and the Auckland District Law Society, and others, to just fine-tune the wording of the Act, I think that it would have a far smoother entry and acceptance. This is all new to us, and we're still trying to think about how some of the wrinkles that may occur to make it work well, and not to compromise New Zealand's reputation as having the second best land registration system in the world, second only, I might add, to Georgia, who doesn't charge. It's free, but we've got a fantastic transfer system in New Zealand. It's almost unique throughout the world. We wouldn't want to see this information gathering exercise impact in a negative sense on our reputation.
Auckland District Law Society's Property Law Committee convener, Bryce Towne.
And the question of Chinese speculation in Auckland's housing market was the subject of the first question of the day when the House resumed on Tuesday. Back now to Rhys Lyon.
Question number one was addressed to the Prime Minister, John Key. It was from New Zealand First leader, Winston Peters.
The Speaker, this question is to the Prime Minister and asks, does he stand by all his statements?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, yes. Supplementary question.
Supplementary question, the Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Does he stand by his statement in 2010 that, and I quote him, looking 4, 5, 10 years into the future, I'd hate to see New Zealanders as tenants in their own country, end of quotes. If so, why, after almost 7 years, has his government failed to collect specific information on foreign buying of land and homes in New Zealand?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, in answer to the first part of the question, yes.
Supplementary question, Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Is he aware that both Beijing and Shanghai, for example, have laws preventing non-residents inflating demand and buying houses in those cities? And does he consider such measures would be racist if applied here?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, well, every country has different rules, but what I would say is the current rules around foreign investment were actually passed by the Labor government in 2005. They're actually in line with the vast majority of developed countries. For example, in the UK, the US, Canada, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, Japan, Sweden and many other OECD countries, there are no or very few restrictions on foreigners buying residential property. And when it comes to Australia, which theoretically has one in relation to second-hand properties, it's been spectacularly unsuccessful.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question. Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Why won't his government, in his own words, get some guts and introduce restrictions on foreign buyers of homes and land, like, for example, in China, Hong Kong and Singapore, or are they too racist and xenophobic?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, well, for a start off, I'm proud to lead a government that if we were to make changes around foreign investment, it would be to every country and every ethnicity, and we wouldn't just cook things up and single people out.
Yeah. Question.
Order. Order. Supplementary question. The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Is it...
Order.
Is it not the case that his opposition to New Zealand First Foreign Ownership of Land and Homes Register Bill is that he is scared of Kiwis finding out under his watch just how much land and housing has been flogged off to overseas buyers?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, no, in our view it was poorly drafted.
Next question on Auckland house prices for the Prime Minister was from Opposition Leader Andrew Little.
Does he stand by his statement in relation to affordability of homes in Auckland that, quote, there's a general view that housing prices are not overvalued, end quotes, given that the home ownership rate has fallen to its lowest level in 64 years?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, this is a very misleading piece of selective quoting and, in fact, was made in relation to the affordability of homes in Auckland, was not made in relation to the affordability of homes in Auckland at all. I stand by the full statement I made when asked to comment on the fact that New Zealand has not had a housing correction in 45 years. I said one of the reasons why we probably haven't had a significant correction is because over the last 45 years, there's probably been a general view that houses are not overvalued relative to a whole lot of different factors. My point is that the market in the end assesses when housing is massively overvalued compared to fundamentals, not politicians.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Does he still think that the typical Auckland house is affordable for the typical Auckland family when prices have risen five times faster than incomes under his watch and the median house now costs 10 times the median household income?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
There's a variety of different measures around affordability. But what I do know is that house prices doubled under the previous Labor government. Interest rates are considerably lower than they were under the previous Labor government. If one even looks at home ownership rates, Mr Speaker, our home ownership rates at 64.8% are highly comparable with other OECD countries.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Is he aware that in the past year, the number of owner-occupied homes fell by 2,400, while the number of rentals rose by 19,800? And doesn't that show that his policies are favouring investors while taking the Kiwi dream of home ownership away from families?
Mr Speaker, no.
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, no. There are a variety of different reasons why people might move into rental properties. For one thing, Auckland actually has been growing in size and many people move to a city and actually rent a property as the starting thing that they do.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Why is it the policy of this government, of his government, to allow overseas speculators to profit off New Zealand homes, contributing nothing to our economy while pushing prices out of reach of more and more families?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, firstly, I reject that. But secondly, we have the policies that were introduced actually by the Labor government. They passed the foreign investment rules in 2005. Apparently, Winston was part of it, happily praising it and voting for it. Mr Speaker, they were good enough for Labor in government, but they're not good enough for Labor in opposition. Mind you, it's a very different Labor Party these days, isn't it?
Supplementary.
Order. Order. Supplementary question. Order. Order. Order.
Selective memory over there.
Order. I'm calling for less interjection from my right-hand side. Andrew Little, supplementary question.
Mr Speaker, can he guarantee that the IRD database will be public and will clearly reveal the number of non-residents buying New Zealand houses?
As the member knows, there's a process that we're going through at the moment. There's a bill in the House and we're looking at that data. But what I do know is our information won't be cooked up. And when someone asks me a question about it, I won't lose my rag at TV3 like that member did before.
Supplementary.
Order. Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Why did he give offshore speculators 4 months' notice of the upcoming change of rules, giving them time to game the old system, when he cancelled the KiwiSaver kickstart on the day of the budget so parents couldn't sign their kids up?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, if the member ever gets into government, then he may realise that tax law is a very complicated and complex thing. And if we hadn't actually had a period of time where there was an opportunity for tax specialists and others to actually give input into the process, then you may get unintended consequences. Secondly, Mr Speaker, nothing changes under tax law in New Zealand as a result of the bright line test. If someone buys on revenue account, then they will still be subject to paying tax. And you can be sure, as I said at my post-cabinet press conference yesterday afternoon, that IRD will be looking very closely at people who buy houses at the moment, like they do all the time, and they will be collecting tax revenue off people that owe it.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
If he has done all he can on housing, why are Auckland house prices accelerating rather than stabilising? Why are the number of homes owned by people who live in them falling? And why are so many offshore websites urging speculators to keep on buying in Auckland?
Well, Mr Speaker.
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
As we know, we really have to question any piece of data or information the Labor Party puts out there these days in whatever language they introduce it. Mr Speaker, I actually stand by the government's record on what we've done. 118 special housing areas, of which we expect 50,000 new dwellings. The vast bulk of them are in Auckland, Mr Speaker. The bright line test, Mr Speaker, that's there. The $50 million that's set aside for residential housing development, Mr Speaker. The KiwiSaver Home Start program, as I saw the other day in the paper, is doing exceedingly well. Mr Speaker, there are other rules that we've changed around the cost of imported materials. This government has done a great deal when it comes to housing, Mr Speaker.
Order.
This is
Order.
An opposition that...
Order. That answer's quite long enough.
A final question on the subject of Auckland houses was from Labor's David Parker and was addressed to the Minister of Trade, Tim Grosser.
Does the current draft of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement purport to restrict a future New Zealand government from banning the sale of existing New Zealand homes to foreign buyers from Trans-Pacific Partnership countries?
David Parker's question was answered for Tim Grosser by his Associate Minister, Todd McClay.
As TPP provisions are still under negotiation and not finalised, we cannot comment on what may or may not be included at this time.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, the Honourable David Parker.
Why did lead New Zealand TPP negotiator brief MPs from all parties that while the draft TPP does allow existing categories of investment controls to continue, it does not allow the introduction of new categories like a ban on the purchase of housing?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Todd McClay.
No, Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure that's entirely what he said or he meant. But what I would say is this issue hinges on the specific facts and measures and their application. The current operation of the Overseas Investment Act is not impacted by existing FTAs, and including requirements, consents and acquisition of land or sensitive land. But I would state again, Mr. Speaker, I cannot comment on what provisions might be in the TPP negotiation and whether or not it will be concluded.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, the Honourable David Parker.
Is he aware that the New Zealand-China Free Trade Agreement allows restrictions on foreign buyers of New Zealand homes, including Chinese buyers, so long as subsequent agreements with other countries are no more generous?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, I'm aware there are a number of conditions in all of our free trade agreements. What I would also say, though, Mr. Speaker, is under the last Labor government, around conditions for the purchase of things in New Zealand, including
order,
under
order,
the...
Order, order, order.
My position was... My question
I'm going
was
to,
very
I'm
specific.
Going to ask the member to repeat the question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Is he aware that the New Zealand-China Free Trade Agreement allows restrictions on foreign buyers of New Zealand homes, including Chinese buyers, so long as subsequent agreements with other countries are no more generous?
The Honourable Todd McClay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On behalf of the Minister, I'm aware that our free trade agreements have a number of conditions in them, and many of them are different. But what I would say, Mr. Speaker, there are a number of ways to address the policy issue that the member has announced, one of which is to use the Overseas Investment Act and to make that more restrictive. The previous government under Labor did that. Most certainly, Mr. Speaker, in negotiating our free trade agreements, the government is mindful of getting the balance right and assuring that the agreements are in the best interests of New Zealand.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, the Honourable David Parker.
Given that he will not say what the draft text is saying, will he say whether his position on the TPP is that it should allow restrictions on foreign buyers of New Zealand homes, just as the China Free Trade Agreement does?
The Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister's position is the same as that of the government's. Most certainly what I would say to you is... What I would say to you is that we as a government are very keen to make sure that our agreements are balanced, that they are good for New Zealand and the New Zealand economy, that they are fair to all nations. Mr. Speaker, you will not see this party on this side of the House singling out any one group of individuals. We believe they should be fair. Mr. Speaker, we're not Hobbit haters. We don't mind the Koreans. We're not against the Chinese. And as far as the TPP is concerned, I say to that member, we're not opposed to Americans playing either.
Supplementary.
Point of order, Chris Hipkins.
Mr. Speaker, while there was some interjection during the latter part of the Minister's answer, he continued to go down a line of attack on the opposition, which you have earlier ruled is out of order.
Order. No. No. It was a long answer. To be absolutely honest, I couldn't hear the end of it because there was so much interjection. But it's a robust debating chamber. There will be occasions when ministers will include some political statements in their answers.
Supplementary
question, the Honourable David Parker.
Will he guarantee that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement will not restrict his government or a subsequent government from banning the purchase of New Zealand homes by foreigners from TPP countries?
Speaker.
The Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, I state again that the TPP is currently under negotiation. Indeed, the Minister is overseas and negotiating right now. What I will give an assurance absolutely of, Mr. Speaker, is that for the government to decide to sign TPP, it will be overall good for New Zealanders and the New Zealand economy. We're a trading nation. We don't become richer by selling things to ourselves. We must ensure we have good access to other markets, competitive access, and that's what the TPP negotiation is about.
That's right.
Now for something completely different from Greens co-leader, James Shaw.
My question is to the Prime Minister and reads, does he stand by his statement that, quote, I'd bet my bottom dollar that there would be considerable debate and discussion in New Zealand about whether the flag should change, end quote.
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes, I do. I made that comment when the flag consideration project had received about 2,300 different flag designs. I'm delighted to inform the member that the last count the panel had received 10,291 flag designs. My bottom dollar is pretty safe, I think.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
Does he accept that only 25% of New Zealanders want to change the flag, whereas 87% of New Zealanders are concerned about climate change?
Speaker, are you right, Honourable Prime
Speaker,
Minister?
No, I don't think you actually can make that prediction until we go through the referendum process. As the member knows, there will be two referendums in relation to the flag change. I think we're ultimately going to have to wait until that final referendum takes place in early 2016 to see whether New Zealanders want to change the flag or not. I hope they do, because I believe passionately that a new flag can be used as part of a way of showing how proud we are of our country, and how we unify a multicultural society.
Supplementary.
Order. Supplementary question, James Shaw.
To the Prime Minister, given that climate change submissions outnumbered flag submissions by 15,000 to 2,300, does he think that changing the flag was the right priority for him to personally champion?
Right, Honourable Speaker, Prime Minister.
Well, Speaker, I would say, and I've said this on numerous occasions, the flag is just one of a great many issues as Prime Minister that I handle. I've never argued it's the most important. In fact, back in 2010, when that issue was raised significantly with me, I made the point there that it were much bigger and important issues to deal with at the time. But over time, I think we can actually consider a whole range of different factors. When it comes to climate change, Mr Speaker, you're right, the member's right, there were 17,000 and 23 submissions received by the government. But actually most of those were stock standard ones, they're pro forma, and they were received by and prompted by the Green Party. In fact, there were only 1,485 submissions that were unique, Mr Speaker. If we go to the flag, something of interest because it was the member's primary question, he may be interested to know that there were 146,000 views of the New Zealand flag history video, that 6,000 people visited workshops and information stands, more than 850,000 online visits, about 2.7 million views of the flag gallery. And Mr Speaker, I need to tell the member that every single night I'm in my office, I'm signing back letters thanking the young people of New Zealand who are writing to me, I've got to say, in their hundreds with their new flag.
And now I've heard enough. Supplementary question, James Shaw.
And I thank the Prime Minister for his acknowledgement of how successful the Green Party was at galvanising public opinion.
Just ask
my question, my supplementary question is, so if he plans to listen to the public on changing the flag, why didn't his government listen to the 99% of submitters who argued for a 2030 emissions reduction target of at least 40% below 1990 levels?
Speaker.
The right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, because in the end, of course, we undertake consultation, but consultation doesn't always mean agreement with a specific point of view. The target that we've come up with, minus 30% off a 2005 base, we believe is actually a balanced and fair target to take in. It's just one of the things that we do. We think it's about right, given the cost to our economy and the challenges that we have with half of our emissions coming from agriculture. And the other point that we've made with the target is that we're quite happy to increase that target over time if we can get some of the scientific solutions we need for agriculture. And I'm actually very confident, as I'm sure the member himself will be, that over the next 10 to 15 years there'll be significant breakthrough when it comes to agriculture.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
..of the increase in economic hardship, especially in the regions, does he now accept that there's better uses for $26 million of taxpayers' money than a flag referendum that the public doesn't want?
The right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, well, look, Mr Speaker, firstly, we don't know what the final cost of the referendum process will be. And I simply say that because Labor and the Greens actually pushed along a referendum on the mixed ownership model after we'd had a general election, which we won with a landslide on this very topic. And in the end, the estimates were $9 million and the actual cost was $6.7 million. But, Mr Speaker, here's the point, isn't it? Here's the point. This is a major constitutional issue, and this party believes in democracy in the same way that this party believes in a multicultural society and being fair and decent to people and not cooking things up. That's what the...
Order.
The Speaker cutting off the Prime Minister's microphone. I'm Rhys Lyon reporting for parliamenttoday.co.nz with funding from Parliament.